Good morning. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in this week for Joy Cardine. Well, it's Friday. It is 8 o'clock, and that can only mean it is time for the Week in Review, when we take a look back at the week in stories, and we take a look at it from a couple of perspectives, including yours. If you've got a story that we haven't talked about, something that's not been covered by the media, something you'd like to talk about, bring it up. 800-642-1234 is our toll-free line. And if you're calling from the Madison area, it is 263-1890. You can also join us by email. It's easy to do at talk@wpr.org. As always, we've got two guests joining us to talk about the issues of the week. We're joined in the studio today by Ann Althaus, a professor of law at UW-Madison, also a contributing op-ed writer to the New York Times, and a blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. And I would say she is blogging as we speak, but she stopped long enough to say good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you along. And also joining us by phone, Tony Palmieri was with us, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh. He is also a member of the Oshkosh Common Council and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. And good morning, Tony Palmieri.
Good morning, Gene, and good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
Well, good to have both of you along. I'm going to start, I think, with international news. And before we do that, I'm going to invite callers one more time, because we always want to bring in those points of view when we can. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number in Madison, 263-1890. Well, let's go to the international scene, and a couple of things happening this week. We've got the G8 underway. The president is sick this morning, but he is on the road to recovery. And in there, I think the most interesting, there's been a lot of interesting story, climate change, of course, and then the talk over the nuclear weapons has been interesting to watch and listen to as well. And let's start with Ann Althaus on that. What is happening over there?
Let me let you provide the background. I don't have it on the top of my head to get the background.
Well, I'm just in the general sense of the G8, the climate change compromise that has been sort of worked out right now. And then President Bush and President Putin have been very tense the last couple of days, talking. That's sort of been overriding the whole talks. It's almost back to the Cold War. We're talking about nuclear missiles and nuclear war and all sorts of things. And it's just been interesting watching the whole thing.
Well, Bush keeps saying, you know, that they're not our enemy, they're our friend. But it's obviously threatening to them if we have missiles near them. So they're standing their ground, and presumably they'll work it out one way or the other. I think that, well, you know, we aren't really enemies, and we aren't really opposed to them. But it's a bit of a standoff right now.
It is indeed. And Tony Palmieri?
Well, on the G8 meeting, the big news is a plan for a voluntary reduction in greenhouse emissions, which is essentially hot air. So essentially the G8 is doing nothing on climate change. And I think you're going to see more and more anger and discontent about that among populations at large throughout the globe. On Russia, I mean, let's face it, Mr. Putin is the most brutal leader they've had in a long time. And one has to wonder why Russia under Putin is even allowed in the G8. I mean, it has become one of the most oppressive societies on earth. It's very life-threatening to be a journalist in Russia, especially if you disagree with Mr. Putin. I think the global community, the democratic nations, need to do something to create better behavior among Russian leadership.
Let's move on. We've got a couple other things I'd like to talk about from a national, international standpoint, I guess. One of the stories that came out this week has to do with Guantanamo. Military judges have dismissed charges against two detainees at Guantanamo. And what happened there, the charges were thrown out against those two detainees who've been there for a long time. The two judges said the U.S. military's case against the men dissolved because the federal government had failed to establish jurisdiction. Tony Palmieri, a real blow for the Bush administration.
It's just more proof that the Bush administration's approach toward justice in the so-called war on terror, it's just not getting much support from courts. And it's time for us to leave Guantanamo.
Well, I think we don't need to go. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I'm sure you would go that far. But it seems to me that there's a really kind of a shocking, if this holds up, you know, if this continues and the lack of jurisdiction really does hold up in other courts, then You know, we have to be critical of the incompetence. I mean, these things should have been handled very precisely with great procedure, and why they didn't get their act together, get the procedure solidified and do everything according to their procedure and show that they were responsible in handling it in a fairly independent way the way they wanted to do. If they don't make that demonstration, then it gives weight to the people who want to transfer things into regular courts rather than have special military procedures. I mean, if you want to justify having special military procedures for the detainees, then you have to have creditable procedures that courts want to defer to, and then you need to follow your own procedures well. So there shouldn't be gaffes like this. I mean, I think that the problem was that they weren't designated as unlawful
combatants. Yeah, there was one word. It was one word.
That's
right.
It was a really important
word.
I'm just shocked that they didn't follow that procedure right. So much hangs on it. And they're asking people to trust them, to leave them alone, to handle it in this special military way. You then have to make the demonstration that that is competent. And to have a gaffe like this is just, you know, head slapping.
And Tony Palmieri, anything to add?
Just that what's going on at Guantanamo has been criticized by the major human rights organizations for a long time now, and it's really time for the U.S. Congress to step in and rectify the situation.
Let's move on to a listener right now who joins us, and Dave is with us from Wanakee. Good morning, Dave.
Yes, hello. I'd like to bring up the Scooter Libby pardon and give a little background and then my observation. Scooter Libby participated in a coordinated attack on a political opponent of the Bush administration. Afterward, he lied to investigators and grand jury to cover up the fact that it was ordered by the vice president. He was subsequently convicted of perjury, obstruction of justice, and lying to investigators, and was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. If he's pardoned by Bush, then the cover-up will have been complete. The lesson to be learned is that if you can obstruct justice enough to protect the president, then he owes you a pardon.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's start with Ann Althaus on this.
I agree with the caller. I don't think he should be pardoned. I think that, you know, no matter how friendly he may have been to Bush, I mean, or even because of that, he should keep an arm's distance from it. He should stand by the rule of law, the fact the man was convicted, and that perjury in blocking an investigation, it's not tolerable. It's not something that should be accepted simply because you're on the side of the president. I didn't accept President Clinton committing perjury in trying to obstruct the investigation of the of sexual harassment that had to do with a civil lawsuit that was brought against him. I'm still upset that, I mean, I think it was taken seriously in the case of Clinton that he was impeached, even though he wasn't removed from office. I think we showed in the Clinton administration that we took that seriously, that perjury isn't something you just blow off. And I think the same standard applies here, or even more. I mean, this is obviously of great consequence however the Fitzgerald investigation The Fitzpatrick investigation, to the extent that it fizzled, it was because they were, you know, because Libby's role. And, I think that has to be taken extremely seriously. And a pardon would just, would be an affront to the rule of law.
Tony Palmieri.
No pardon for Libby, but I think he's clearly taking a fall for the vice president and others in the administration. And, you know, Ann did mention the word impeachment, and, you know, it's too bad the Democrats in the U.S. Congress don't have any stomach for impeachment proceedings, because I think they've certainly got more than enough fodder to go in that direction. But
so you want Cheney to be president?
Well,
you want him out, too. You got to get them both, right?
Yeah. Well,
and then you want Nancy Pelosi to be president. Is that the picture you have in mind?
I certainly want a different president than what we have now. And I think an overwhelming majority of people agree with that.
I think an election is coming up soon enough. You know, if there was a whole impeachment deal going on in Congress, so that would just change all of the chess pieces on the 2008 election. Everyone would be moved into different positions. I think that would be a crazy, unsettling condition to go into. It seems to me that Bush is relatively disempowered right now. I mean, the immigration bill, to talk about some other news in the week, the immigration bill is apparently going nowhere. It died. I mean, that was a real letdown for the president and alienated a lot of conservatives from him. I mean, he's a fairly weak president right now. What more do you want? How much do you want to beat the poor man down?
Maybe it's more about principle. If the U.S. Congress could see fit to impeach Bill Clinton for what he did, and now we have a president who has just created really an international chaos, And there seems to be enough evidence of the misinformation, the distortion, and so on. If that's not enough to at least begin...
Well, he was reelected after a lot of this
impeachment
stuff.
Impeachment proceedings.
He was reelected after...
Something is terribly wrong with our system.
He was reelected after an awful lot of this stuff already happened. I mean, the people spoke. We have another election coming up. We don't want impeachment to become the norm around here. That would be... talk about things that are chaotic and, you know, to have a constant fighting in Congress over the president. Why don't they... I think they ought to buckle down and do some serious legislating over some problem or another while we wait for the next election.
Before I lose,
if high crimes and misdemeanors means lying about relations with an intern and not lying about getting us into war, something is seriously wrong with our priorities in Washington.
So let me come back to Dave's point real quick before we drop this one. Tony Palmieri, is Bush going to grant a pardon, do you think?
I think he will, but probably not until his last week in office.
All right. And Ann Althaus?
I think maybe he will on the way out, but maybe he won't. I don't think he should.
All right. The jury's out here. We'll be taking a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be continuing our discussion of the Week in Review here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Ann Althaus is with us, a professor of law at UW-Madison, also a contributing op-ed writer to the New York Times and a blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. Tony Palmieri is also with us, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Stream. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 21 minutes past 8 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9, hundreds of Turkish soldiers crossed into Kurdish-controlled northern Iraq this week, with more poised at the border. Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guest discussed the conflict between Turkey and the separatist Kurdish Workers' Party. That's up after 9. Until then, it's the Week in Review here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the events of the week and looking for your input into it. If there's a story that we haven't talked about, something you'd like to bring up, now is the time to do so. Our toll-free number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. And in Madison, it is 263-1890. We're joined, as usual, by two people with strong opinions about what's going on, and we'll be taking your opinions as well. Let's go straight to the phones right now, and Mark is with us from Appleton. Good morning, Mark.
Oh, yes, good morning. Hi, I wanted to make a comment about this latest trying by the Bush administration to appoint this new Surgeon General. Are you familiar with that story?
Yeah, good story.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the Bush administration is trying to appoint someone who's fully incompetent, and the reason why they're doing it is they're trying to sabotage the campaign of some of the Democratic people who are running for president, because, you know, they'll have to question him on his past kooky views on homosexuality. And also that, you know, I think it's an attempt to get, you know, sound bites for the next campaign. And I really feel like this guy is completely incompetent. And it's just, I feel like the Bush administration is incompetent also, because they can't manage to appoint anyone that's supposed to do their job.
All right. And for listeners who might not be familiar with this, let me read you just a short piece of AP copy. Gay rights groups are criticizing President Bush's nominee for Surgeon General because of his positions on homosexuality. The groups say Kentucky cardiologist Dr. James Holsinger voted to expel a lesbian pastor from the United Methodist Church, and they say he wrote in 1991 that gay sex is unnatural and unhealthy. So that's the latest nomination to the Surgeon General post. Tony Palmieri, let's start with you on this one. We haven't heard a lot about this story. I mean, there's been a lot of other news this week, and this one is kind of flying under the radar.
Yeah, it sure has, and this seems like an attempt to just pacify the far right-wing base of the Republican Party, and I can't believe that the president thinks that this nomination will get through the United States Senate currently. I mean, this man, Mr. Holsinger, seems like a bona fide homophobe. The writings, so on, just seem kind of outrageous.
But he's
so
been...
Maybe Mark is correct. Maybe it is an attempt just to get this into the presidential debates. Who knows?
The AP story that was just read has the headline, Gay Rights Groups Concerned, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, this is the presentation by the gay rights groups. The groups say, the activists say, the gay groups are criticizing, et cetera, et cetera. But if you go to the next part, you know, I mean, not to criticize you for stopping early, but if we go to the next paragraph, Holsinger has served as Kentucky's health secretary and as chancellor of the University of Kentucky's Medical Center. He's a cardiologist. He's taught at several medical schools and spent more than 3 decades in the Army Reserve. And so on. So I think it's, to be fair to this man who has a long, prestigious medical career, we need to get the story from his perspective, from a neutral perspective, see what his credentials really are. You can dig out something that they say he wrote in 1991, that gay sex is unnatural and unhealthy. I mean, it's possible that he wrote something about diseases that one can get from gay sex or something like that, which everyone knows is true. You can get diseases from all kinds of sex. I don't know what he wrote in 1991. It's many years after that. I don't know what else he wrote. Let's not slur this man. You know, the gay groups have their agenda, too. And let's not assume that Bush is just trying to throw red meat to the far right. I mean, maybe he is. Let's find out. But let's not jump the gun and take the story from the perspective of the ideological groups and not give a fair, research into the man's actual background.
His paper has been linked on the web. I have not had a chance to read the entire paper myself, but anyone who's interested, I'll be able to go to the Washington Post or other websites and read the paper. I mean, this is an individual who believes that homosexuality is a disease that can be cured. And,
wait. Now, you've twisted that, because it says the activists say Holsinger also helped found a Methodist congregation that believes homosexuality is a matter of choice and can be cured. Now, so he helped found a congregation, and then the congregation believes something. What's the link between his founding of a congregation and the fact that the group supposedly believes something? I mean, is that their fundamental tenet?
Well,
was the group founded in order to promote that idea?
People should go and read his writings.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm sure this will come out in the public forum. But suffice it to say, for Attorney General, or for a Surgeon General, I hope the president doesn't give us a divisive individual for that position. I mean, if ever there's a position in the U.S. government you don't want a divisive individual, it would be Surgeon General.
There's always been a certain amount of politics in the use of the Surgeon General. They'll pick someone who actually does represent a certain political view. I mean, he's actually not out there curing our ills. It is something of a soapbox, and you can use it for a particular purpose. Now, if Bush is actually doing that here homosexuality is a disease to be cured, if that were his political agenda, that'd just be nuts, I think. I find it hard to believe he would do that. But if he were doing that, of course it would be terrible.
All right, let's take another call, and Jim is with us now from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I want to talk about the role of the government as and how it ties in with the immigration issue that we're currently talking about. George Lakoff, in his great book Moral Politics, talks about the idea of a nurturing parent, at least as a progressive point of view. And the idea is that the parent is protective of the family and the family's interest. And the Byron Dorgan last night on C-SPAN pointed out that in 2004, the Bush administration prosecuted only 4 employers for employing illegal immigrants. And so it seems to me that the Bush administration is very selective in their application of law and order. If they had a real commitment to enforcement of the law, then we'd have the kind of government we ought to have. But clearly this isn't happening, and it seems to me that the Bush administration's commitment to enforcing the law and a bus ticket will get you anywhere in downtown Milwaukee.
All right, interesting way of looking at that, and it kind of ties in nicely, actually. We talked briefly about what's happening with immigration, but there have been some changes overnight in what's happened with so-called immigration reform. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid now says that immigration reform is not dead, although he has pulled the bill, so we'll see what that means. Not enough senators voted yesterday to limit debate and speed its passage, and so they have pulled it from the floor. He says he looks forward to passing the bill, but a crowded Senate calendar complicates its prospects. Let's start with Ann Althaus on this. How has this immigration debate, how has it gone so far? I mean, it sounds like kind of a disaster, no matter which side you're on.
Well, it was announced as if, oh, okay, now both sides, there's a coalition, and the president says he'll sign it, so this is it, this is our big chance. You know, it's not perfect, but we need to do it now. McCain obviously staked his reputation to a great extent on that, and it just didn't work. I think they really had a failure to understand how ordinary people react to that, very much like the caller, which is, you know, don't we have law? Shouldn't we follow the law? These people are illegal. You know, why aren't you deporting them? Why aren't you securing our borders? Isn't that related to the war on terror and things like that? And so, you know, that's what people think. But I think, you know, at the sort of highest levels, they recognize some economic realities, that there are a lot of businesses that depend to a huge extent on these illegal workers. And if you actually were to just throw them out, it would be a disaster. I mean, they're harvesting the food that you eat. They're doing all sorts of things that you rely on. If you were to say, if you could wave a magic wand and make them all go away, all the illegals be suddenly gone, apparently it would be an economic disaster. And the people who are trying to make a compromise know that, but they have not, they don't have a way to make ordinary people believe that and accept that. It just doesn't seem right to people for lots of different reasons.
We're going to transition to Tony Palmieri here, but before we do that, I want to play just a clip to give you some idea of what the tenor of the debate has been. This is Senator Lindsey Graham, critical of some folks who don't want to compromise on this immigration bill. Except I lost it there. Hold on.
Bring us all together. You're trying to make America better. Why can't we work together? This is why we can't work together. Because some people, when it comes to the tough decisions, back away. Because when you talk about bipartisanship, some Americans on the left and the right consider it heresy.
And Tony Palmieri, there's just an example of the tenor of the debate.
Well, Lindsey Graham's not making any tough decisions. I mean, your caller touched on something. We have an illegal employer problem as much as illegal immigration. And, you know, under current law, anyone who knowingly hires businesses who knowingly hire undocumented workers can get 6 months in jail. And, I mean, your caller made the point. The Bush administration has not been interested in punishing employers, especially big employers, that do this. So that's, you know, that's a major part of the issue that needs to be in the mix. And it was not given enough attention in the bill. And, of course, there's a complete lack of leadership on all sides, and so the bill died, and it was not a good bill.
Well, there you go, and I'm going to play a clip right now, and I'm just going to let it speak for itself, and we'll start with Tony Palmieri first.
My name is Thompson.
Tommy.
I'm the candidate, not the actor.
He is the candidate, not the actor, Tony Palmieri. What do you think of Governor Thompson's run for the presidency?
I enjoy watching the Republican debates just to see how bad Tommy will embarrass himself or the state. I mean, he's not been a very good candidate, and I think objective observers need to acknowledge that. And I actually blame it on the Wisconsin media, because when Tommy was governor for 14 years, he got treated with such softball treatment by the Wisconsin media that he really was not prepared for a national stage. And that's what we're seeing right now. He's not the strongest candidate out there, and I don't think he's going to last into the early primaries.
Ann Althaus.
Well, I mean, I think he has good background and good credentials. I mean, I think the governor should have the edge, and I think he should be up there with Mitt Romney as one of the governors. And, you know, he has good background, he has good experience, but he just doesn't have the sort of media-ready polish. I don't know why, before going into this, he didn't work harder on his image. I mean, he looks terrible on TV, and I'm not saying that it's his natural looks. I mean, I think he could be more polished, he could have better makeup. And his speaking, he always seems to be yelling. And it just seems sort of rough and unready. And yet, I think because of his background, he actually is more ready than most of them. So I don't know why they didn't work a little harder on the superficial elements of it. I mean, maybe it's some stubborn Wisconsin streak that we just think, you know, that we're sort of plain spoken and we are what we are or something like that. But I think it just doesn't play on television.
He spent plenty of time in Washington, though. He should have figured it out by now, don't you
maybe
think?
Maybe not enough time in front of cameras.
Okay.
With people being actually critical. When you put him up next to people who are polished, I mean, compare him to like the super polished Mitt Romney. I mean, it's just shocking. I mean, Romney is probably over polished, right? He's gone too far in the other direction, although it seems to be working people seem to be buying the, you know, the sort of Hollywood image of the very debonair man.
Well, speaking of Mitt Romney, here is some criticism he had during those debates of the administration and the war in Iraq.
It's a hypothetical that I think is an unreasonable hypothetical, and the answer is we did what we did. We did the right thing based on what we knew at that time. I think we made mistakes following the conduct or the collapse of Saddam's government.
And so there you go, just one example of the Republican presidential candidates in that debate as they try to figure a way to back gracefully away from the Bush administration and the war in Iraq. Ann Althaus.
Well, they're not back. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No,
they're
go
not
ahead.
Backing away from the idea that we need to follow through on the responsibility that we incurred by carrying out the overthrow of Saddam, that we can't just declare that we've lost and back out, which seems to be the Democratic approach. They want to do it better. The idea is, you know, we have a responsibility. We need to follow through with it. But Bush has been incompetent in the way that he's done it. Now, I mean, that's actually kind of similar to what Kerry said, at least some of the time when he was running in 2004, that he'd just do it better. And, of course, I always found that kind of unbelievable. So you're going to do it better. Everybody, Bush would like to do it better, too. Everybody would like to do it better. How are you going to do it better?
Gene, some Republicans this week in the Senate came out and urged the president to adopt the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group. And I think the main reason for that is that they smell a disaster coming up in November of 2008. I mean, the Republicans who are concerned about not repeating November of 2006 realize something needs to be done. And this president is really not helping people in his party. And I think, you know, Senator McCain has completely undermined his chances to be president by just this dog-headed persistence in supporting a policy that's clearly not working by any standard you judge it by. So I think there are some Republicans that are really hoping the president starts to see the light on this.
How about the standard of what would happen if we just pulled out?
It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where things could be any worse than they are out there right
now.
You've
think
got
that's
a full-fledged
amazing failure of imagination there, Tony.
Well, you know, Gene, you had a guest in your last show that was very articulate about defending the president on this, especially on the war. I think a lot of those people really need to start volunteering to serve. I mean, it's very easy to talk about this issue when it's other people's children that are fighting the battle, you know, and it's time for a lot of people to start putting up on
this. Well, you know, it's
this.
Very easy to talk about pulling out when it's other people's families who will die in a genocide. Oh, it's only Iraqis who will be dying in a genocide.
Iraqis are
Aren't
dying.
Aren't you being insensitive there? If you're going to talk about other, you know, people who only don't care when it's other people. What about the other people who are the Iraqis who
the
would
Iraqis,
be subjected to chaos and genocide? If
the Iraqis are dying now. The Americans are dying now. And there's developing a global consensus that our presence there is not helping. A growing number of Republicans are coming to that conclusion. I mean, the president's policy is not working. It's difficult to argue otherwise.
Well, as I said, I think not working could be compared to what the real situation would be if we weren't there. And the Iraqi government has not asked us to leave.
Yes, they have.
No, they have not.
The Iraqi parliament has been very clear.
It's a vote, but it's not about leaving now. It's if you look at the details of what that is, it is not a request that we leave now.
Well, it's certainly a request that we leave. There's certainly not a ringing endorsement from the Iraqi.
Right.
There's certainly not a ringing endorsement from the Iraqi parliament.
So what's going to happen with this bipartisan plan that we've heard so much about? You know, Republicans are urging President Bush to adopt it privately. It says here in the AP copy that Bush has told lawmakers he is, quote, open to the study group's recommendations. It's hard to know what that means. So what's the future of this plan?
Are you talking about on the war?
Yeah.
The future is the president is going to keep doing what he's doing, and until the Democratic majority in both houses of Congress decide to start doing what the voters sent them there to do, which is to get us out of Iraq, he'll continue his policy. I think the ball is really in the Democrats' court.
I think it's incredibly deceptive to say that the voters voted for them to do some specific thing. The 06 election was about lots of little congressional elections where there were lots of different issues, and some things were decided on the fact that some senator said some bad word on one occasion. It was not some massive referendum on the war. To portray it like that, it has always been distorted.
And we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we've got some listeners lining up who would like to chime in. If you'd like to be one of them, here's the toll-free number. It is 800-642-1234. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. Lots to talk about and about 20 minutes left to do so here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes before 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9, hundreds of Turkish soldiers crossed into Kurdish-controlled northern Iraq this week, with more poised at the border. Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guest discuss the conflict between Turkey and the separatist Kurdish Workers' Party. This hour, we are continuing our week in review. Ann Althaus joins us, professor of law at UW-Madison, also a contributing op-ed writer to the New York Times and a blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. And Tony Palmieri is also with us, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh. He is also a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene, and it's good to have both of them along right now. Well, we've got a couple other things to talk about, and let's go to listeners and find out what they've got to say. And we're joined now. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. And could you turn your radio down?
Oh, okay. My apologies.
That's okay.
No, actually, they didn't, the person screening the calls didn't take it. My question is this. In regards to Iraq, I was wondering, Senator McGovern in his book had actually made a proposal that if the U.S. troops were to leave, that troops from surrounding nations of Iraq would be able to intervene and act as a peacekeeping force. Do your guests feel that that might be a solid alternative, or don't you think that would really work?
All right, we'll wind up Iraq on that note, and it's a good question. Let's start with Ann Althaus.
Well, I don't really know if they're offering to do that or capable of doing that. It'd be nice if other people would help us more. I think we sought a coalition when we went in, but, we've ended up handling most of it ourselves for various reasons.
And Tony Palmieri.
It's a possibility, but until this administration demonstrates some willingness to budge on any part of their policy, all of these other suggestions are just really hot air.
And there you go. And I don't know if anybody was following news from the federal communications this
mm-hmm.
week. And so if you feel like making a fleeting utterance, now is the time.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Especially in the Second Circuit.
Officially, I have to say it's not the time to make a fleeting utterance. But broadcasters seem to have won a round in the battle over the inadvertent use of a bad word. A federal appeals court ruled that penalizing a broadcaster over accidentally aired expletives is invalid, and the ruling questions the FCC's assumption that certain swear words are inherently indecent. A lot of this might be inside the industry, but let's start with you, Tony Palmieri. Is there anything ground-shaking in all of this? The FCC says one thing, the courts say another, and can we swear on the air? Does it really matter whether we can or not?
Well, the FCC has seen itself as kind of like a big brother since the 1960s and 70s. And, I do think there needs to be always a defense of the First Amendment rights. But, in many ways, when it comes to mass media, there's one strain of thought that says, especially when it comes to cable television, if you're upset at the language on cable television, then don't buy cable. Just don't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the networks are another issue. But everyone has the ability to buy or not buy cable. So if you don't like the language on cable, just simply don't buy it.
But over-the-air broadcasting's different.
Yeah.
All right. And Ann
Althaus. Personally, I not only have cable, but I subscribe to Howard TV, so I want a fair amount of this bad language. So I mean, but it should be noted that the Second Circuit's, first of all, it's an appellate court. It's not the Supreme Court, and it's not our circuit, the Seventh Circuit. It's just one circuit, the Second Circuit, and they didn't decide it on First Amendment grounds. They didn't say that there is a right to say the F word on TV as long as it's a fleeting expletive. They said, the FCC didn't follow its procedures in a proper way. They said they were sort of influenced by free speech concerns, but they didn't ground it as a free speech right. So there's no right to say the F word on television. And I think it's also important to notice that the way this whole thing got started was a little while back, Bono. Oh, the great Bono, a Nobel Prize. Give him a Nobel Prize. He's the humanitarian of the world. Bono said the F word, I think. Was it F word? So that kind of opened things up. And then, but this case was actually about Cher and Nicole Richie. On one of these award shows, I think it was Golden Globe, Cher said the F word, and then Nicole Nicole Richie said the SH word, and then that was the basis of the case. So, you know, it's really just kind of a decline in standards. I mean, I think there are some things that are done with bad language, like things that are the dramas on HBO, like Deadwood and The Sopranos. Those are great. But what we're talking about here are, you know, things like awards show where a celebrity gets up and just blurts something out. And I think it's kind of a sad commentary that the FCC, you know, which has this responsibility to regulate the airwaves in the public interest, that to say that we want to put some pressure on the networks, if they're going to have stars who can't think of anything to say other than to just blurt out four-letter words, that they need to put in, you know, whatever it is, the six-second delay and take those things out, you know, because ordinary people want to sit around and watch the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever and not have to put up with these nitwits who are so inarticulate that they just blurt out crap. Can I say crap? I didn't say the SH word.
I've got my finger on the button right over here, so we're still okay. Let's go to a caller right now. Robert joins us, and Robert is in Rollo, Illinois. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. For the past week, NPR has been running stories about the Six-Day War. This is the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War between Israel and its Arab neighbors. And there were a number of things that were stated during the reporting, which I took issue with. If I could stay on the line for a rebuttal, I'd really appreciate that. But one of the things that is commonly reported is that Israel actually started the war, and in fact, Israel did not start the war. The so-called preemptive attack on Egyptian Air Force was actually a response to Egyptian provocation, where they aligned 90,000 of their Egyptian troops were massed at the Israeli border. 900 Egyptian tanks were at the Israeli border, and 2 weeks prior to the Six-Day War, Egypt had imposed a naval blockade on the Straits of Tehran, which prevented Israel from basically shipping out to the rest of Europe. Commercial shipping was completely blocked off, and by any modern standards, a naval blockade of commercial shipping is an act of war.
Okay, let's start with Tony Palmieri on that. The Six-Day War, of course, has been the focus of a lot of looking back the last few weeks. And in your mind, Tony Palmieri, what is the long-lasting impact of that event?
Well, we obviously know that the relationship of Israel and its neighbors, the tension, leads to many other conflicts in the area. And I think from the perspective as American citizens, we should be disappointed that our government has displayed little to no leadership, especially in the last 6 years, to resolve those issues. I mean, the hostility toward Israel has increased, and the so-called peace process between Israel and its neighbors is just about dead. And the Bush administration has to take quite a bit of responsibility for that, independently of who started the Six-Day War.
Ann Althaus.
Well, obviously, it's a deep and longstanding problem that we noticed the Six-Day War because it was a very dramatic event, but it was a point in a timeline that goes, as the caller said, goes back well before then. And to untangle it and figure out what happened in the past, I guess, is less important than to try to figure out how to go forward. But no one's been able to do that yet. And it's true that we haven't seen the Bush administration do very conspicuous things like the Clinton administration had done. But all those other things failed, too. So I don't know what the solution is.
Let's turn to state news now, because we've got just a few minutes left in the program before we have to go for the week in review. And in Wisconsin news this week, the Joint Finance Committee was meeting all week. And if you had a chance to see any of the testimony, largely pretty collegial. But, you know, the real fight is ahead. And the Joint Finance Committee is one thing. The governor's office is another thing. The legislature is yet another thing. And let's start with Ann Althaus on this. In terms of the budget, have you been following it, first of all?
I don't follow it that closely.
No,
I assume they'll work it out one way or another. But is there any particular aspect of it that you want to talk about?
Well, there's tons of aspects we could talk about. There's the big budget. There's domestic partner benefits, of course, that has become an issue for state employees. The University of Wisconsin.
The University of Wisconsin. Let's talk about that. I mean,
okay,
obviously, I have self-interest there. I think
I think they need
to come up with a lot of money to help the University of Wisconsin. I think we have a huge problem right now. We're losing faculty. We're not comparable to the peer institutions. And it's going to be, you know, it's the sort of like the crown of the state is the University of Wisconsin system. To let that become second rate would be a horrible disaster for the state. What brings more respect and regard to the state of Wisconsin than the University of Wisconsin system? It's really a tragedy what's happening.
And Tony Palmieri, I guess you have a self-interest too. You're at UW Oshkosh.
Yeah, and I agree with everything Ann said. But also as a local government official, what's really, really disappointing to me is that the state government has really been assaulting the shared revenue program for a decade now. And so the resolving budget issues at the local level is requiring more property tax and more fees, and it's a problem. They also enforce abusive levy limits on localities. They limit how much money we can spend. You know, the Republicans especially used to be fun when they really believed in local control. They don't believe in that anymore. I mean, increasingly, Madison wants to nitpick and control everything that municipalities do. And that's a problem in this budget. And let me say one other thing about the budget, Gene. That the legislature could make everybody feel a lot better about it if they would pass the bill that would restrict raising money while the budget is being debated. Currently, our legislators are able to have fundraisers while the budget is being considered. I mean, it's outrageous. And there is a bill in place that would outlaw that, and unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be close to passage.
Yeah, there was, and I'll get some response to from Ann Althaus on that. There was a story, I think, in this morning's Wisconsin State Journal regarding that. Members of the Joint Finance Committee sitting in session, going to a fundraiser, and then coming back the next day to take a look at issues. And Ann Althaus says it may be nothing's happening, but there's certainly a perception there.
I think the appearance of impropriety is important. I mean, how are you supposed to know whether things are happening or not? You can't. So the procedures, the appearance of propriety is very important to uphold. And, you know, just to go back to the domestic partnership things, I mean, I think those benefits are really important, especially to the University of Wisconsin. When you're trying to attract young faculty now, it just looks bad that we don't have comparable benefits to other schools. And many of the people we're trying to recruit are people who would use those benefits. Well, we lost people who are going elsewhere, and they feel, even quite aside from their financial interest, it's a personal affront to people who, have a job and can't get the same benefits that other people have, can't get health coverage for their partners when heterosexual people can. I mean, it's just an affront to people. I don't know why we don't solve that.
And earlier we were talking about funding for the UW system, and I asked this question in the full realization that both of you do have a self-interest in it. Earlier this week we did a show on the UW system and fears that it is slipping from its status as a world-class institution. And from both of you, I'm wondering, and as we talk, keeping in the budget and context, I'm wondering if you see evidence of that, or if we are at a precipice, or if we've got room to wiggle here. Or let's start with Tony Palmieri on that.
Well, we certainly have morale problems. I can tell you that as a faculty member. We know that our salaries have lagged behind. Students have the feeling that over the last 5 or 6 years, they're paying a lot more and getting less. Larger class sizes, less class availability. So everything Ann said about the system before is completely correct. But, you know, what's really so sad to me is that the majority of our members of the legislature are UW system graduates, and yet you would never know that from the way they have been treating the campus. And really, it's going back now about 10 or 15 years. So if we really want to help the economy of the state and continue all the other great things that the UW does, of course, I speak as an employee of the system, it's really time to change course.
Ann Althaus.
Well, you know, I don't want to just keep promoting self-interest here.
Okay.
I mean, I support the University of Wisconsin. It's important.
Well, let's move on. This was another story that's been sort of in and out of the news last couple of weeks. Democratic Party Chair Joe Winicky told party leaders that he'll stop lobbying for AT&T on a bill designed to ease the telecommunications company entry into the state cable TV market. Some Democrats across the state have called on Winicky to stop lobbying or resign his party position. And this is a story that, at first you didn't think it was going anywhere, but it really turned out to have some legs on it. And Ann Althaus, let's start with you on it. Ultimately, Joe Winicky, he said at first,
it was too much work. What did he say? Something like
well,
that?
Well, no, he didn't. Well, ultimately,
no, I mean, when he quit doing it.
Well,
it was
he
that
said
it was
he wasn't going to quit for a while. There was no clear conflict. And then ultimately he said, well, it's just taking too much time away from his work to deal with all the issues surrounding this.
That's a diplomatic way of putting it, face-saving way to put it. I mean, I think it goes back to the appearance of impropriety issues that we were talking about before. We should have high standards for behavior of the legislatures or be quite suspicious of them.
I got a kick when he said that it was the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. what I'd like to know from Joe is, what wing of the party is he in? Is he in the conservative wing of the Democratic Party? And it's just incredible, the cynicism.
And it has. Do you think, we were talking earlier about the campaign finance thing, and then there's this issue. Is there a larger issue regarding, politics in Wisconsin lurking out there? Wisconsin always had this reputation as sort of the clean state. The last couple of years, there's a tarnish on that. And go ahead.
Let me say, Representative Corey Mason and Representative Dean Crawford have come forward with a bill to open up the closed partisan caucuses. That's where much of the abuse goes on. They take the budget, other bills, and close session. No other unit of government in Wisconsin can go into that kind of closed session for those reasons. And yet Mason and Crawford cannot even get co-sponsors. What a sad commentary on the state of this current legislature. If they'd open up those closed partisan caucuses, that would go a long way to solving the problems we have.
And Ann Althaus, any comments?
No, I'm not going to disagree with that.
All right.
Sounding very good.
We're going to close with a final story that I'm going to play a clip from, and I'm sure it will have an impact on all of our lives.
You are the first four contestants on The Price is Right. And now, here is the star of The Price is Right, Bob Barker.
Well, there you are, Bob Barker. How old is Bob Barker? He's 80 or something like that, and he is stepping down after, I don't know if it's 35 years on the air. Tony Palmieri, is this going to have a huge impact on your life?
Not really, but I think he'd be a good running mate for Mitt Romney.
In terms of the look and everything?
Just the look and everything, yes.
All right. And Ann Althaus?
I used to watch that show back in the 1960s when Bill Cullen was the MC. I really never got used to the fact that it's not Bill Cullen. I thought it was Bill Cullen's show.
So Bob Barker's still the new host for you.
Bob Barker, he's his upstart. Who is he? I just can't believe that people have been interested in guessing the prices of household goods for that many years. It's absurd. I buy things, but I can't remember the price. I don't know what the price of milk is. I buy milk. I don't remember the price. Why, this idea that it's so fascinating to know exactly what things cost. You can make fun of a lot of shows like American Idol or something like that, but The Price is Right.
Yeah, well, there it is. we're out of time, so we're going to have to go. Ann Althaus, thanks for joining us today.
You.
It's been great having you here. And Tony Palmieri, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much, Gene. Appreciate it.
Yep, we appreciate both of your time. Ann Althaus, a professor of law at the UW-Madison, also a contributing op-ed writer to the New York Times and a blogger at althaus.blogspot.com. Tony Palmieri has been with us as well. He is an associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, also a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. And way back when, in 2004, he was a Green Party candidate for the state legislature. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can check out our web archives at WPR.org. Leo Duran produced this hour, and he also provided us with on-air production. Thanks to Leo, Cheryl Gasser, Christina Taylor, Karen Prager, and everyone else who helped me out this week. John Munson is in next week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.